Bing bing bong bing bong bang bang bing bong bong bang bang bang. It's the news according to me. Yeah, bing bing bang bang bing bang bang. It's the day. Dave Lowe. Hello, good morning. Well, hello there. It's Tuesday, September 9th, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2025. I am your host, Kevin, this morning on the show, the news according to me. Not the news according to you, not the news according to what you think or what anybody else thinks. It's the news about what I think about what the news is. It's my opinion. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a financial counselor. However, I have an opinion. I got a lot of stories. I got stories out. Yeah. I'm an old guy with a lot of stories. Back when I was a kid, we used to do this, all this stuff. And now we just tell these kids to get off my lawn. That's all I do now. Turn these lights off and get off my lawn. Yeah. I have in my cup this morning, I have Big Train Chai. They don't sponsor the show, but they certainly support the show with the energy that this thing, what it does to me. The Big Train Chai, plus a little bit of Pacific Chai in there. Creamy chai. Vanilla. With Almond Joy creamer in it. We have, that's the standard. That's almost, I almost can't do the show without that. I just, if I don't have any, I just don't even bother doing the show. And then there's, the show is just really a reason to drink the chai. Or maybe the chai is just a reason to do the show. You can't do one without the other. The backup here that I have, it's a little strange. I put plenty of sugar in that. I just made some sweet tea this morning. And I'm pretty sure I put enough sugar in there. But it would seem to be a little bit shy on the sugar level. So I'm not sure what that's all about. But I did put peaches in it. Peaches were still frozen. I don't think there's going to be there's really no peach flavor in this, which is fine for that first cup because first glass of sweet iced tea, because that way it concentrates more in the rest of it. So the next cup of tea I pour will have more intense peach flavor, and the peach flavor just gets more and more intense as the days go by as I drink it. It's because the peaches stay in the peacher. We don't call it a pitcher now. We call it a peacher. And because it peachifies the tea. Peachifies and solidifies. Oh, yeah. Call the show if you want to. Call or text. We do have some information. At the end of the show today, there was actually a call. I didn't get the call. They didn't leave a message. And we know who they are. But we did get a text. And we'll talk about that text at the end of the show. I'll be talking about the listener, faithful listeners out there. In this case, listener who texted the show. We've got some important information to share about that. The 812-379-8778. Call or text anytime. Ask the show. Ask the questions. If you called while I'm recording the show, I might actually answer the show. I probably won't ever answer the phone simply because it's too distracting. This is the biggest problem I've got when I do my live show. Be quite honest with you. Or quite open, I guess, not honest. I'm always honest. I'm just open. Just more transparency, you might want to say. A lot of times when people say I got to be honest with you. What they're really saying is they want to be more transparent. They want to be open. They want to be, what they're saying, honest, just because it's, I don't know why they say it. Because maybe they're lying the rest of the time. Usually when somebody says, I got to be honest with you, that means they're about to tell you about a lie. All right. So anyway, I've got, when I do live shows, there are some folks that get on and make comments and do things it actually becomes very distracting for me because I'm trying to answer I'm trying to be courteous and answer their text messages, and I can't. A lot of times after I say something, somebody makes some comments, and it makes it very difficult to do that. I don't have a producer. I don't have somebody fielding my calls and my messages in the chat room. So that part of it is very difficult. Now, Rush Limbaugh, he was very good at doing that. Now, he had Snerdly producing the show. So for him, it was much different story. It was a much very different situation there. He had, you know, he had a call screener. He had all this stuff going on. He was able to, you know, people would call into the show and they would line him up and he knew what the call was going to be about. He could see on his screen what the, you know, what the call was going to be coming in. And then he would simply take the call and he would actually talk to people during the show, which was, it's brilliant. That's a big part of caller, engagement, listener engagement, callers. I'm not sure what's going on up above me right now at the moment, but there's apparently something happening. I hear something sounds like a washer or a dryer maybe has just turned on. So not sure what's going on with that. But the so you might hear that in the background. You might hear like a rumbling sound, possibly. Yeah, you kind of hear that. It's kind of – I've got the gate on the audio here pretty well tuned up, but it's still coming through a little bit. So anyway, very distracting. We have that kind of thing happening with this show. It's just me, and I can't really field calls, think about things, and maintain a, you know, continue a thought with all that. I can juggle a lot of stuff. Can't juggle that much stuff. A little bit more difficult. Uh-oh. Had a little cough there. That's what I use the mute button for. And that's what the sweet tea is for, is to wash that stuff down. We have a swallowed a little chai in the wrong pipe there or something. Topical Tuesday. We have, today's Topical Tuesday. Welcome to the show. And we have lots of things going on. Now, apparently, the leftists now are running out to defend the Second Amendment because Trump brilliantly came out because so we have this couple of actually a lot of non-binary and transgender people have been involved in most of these school shootings. We haven't been told that. We're just now finding out that most of the people behind these mass shootings, the school shootings, they've always, you know, blamed them on white men, white boys. That's not been the case. A disproportionate number of them have been from non-binary, even the Columbine. I did not know this. These two boys who did that considered themselves to be non-binary. I did not know that. That's the way I'm understanding it anyway. But that's the way I understand it. And most of these kinds of shootings have been that way. There's been a lot of confusion among these kids. And, of course, the narrative, there's a really good little documentary that this guy did. Well, actually, there's a documentary that this guy did a review on. And it was very good. It was this lady did the documentary, and she kind of did an after. It's like about a 35-minute little mini doc. She did kind of a review of what we know now about Columbine that weren't told at the time. And this guy, he was very closely related to what was going on there. I think he was actually I can't remember how old he was at the time, but he was friends of a family that actually were involved in some of the shootings and some of the things that were said. And there was the one girl who said, she was asked if she was a Christian, and she said yes, and she got killed. And, of course, that was a big deal. Later, it was determined that the fellow who witnessed that apparently did not actually see what happened, and it was probably a different girl who did that. However, there were other girls and other kids who that happened to, and some said yes, some said no. Some of them said no, even though they, you know, just to get by, just to live. Regardless of what happened there, That's not, you move on from that. That's not necessarily denying Christ. This is, I would put that up there with the whole, kind of lying to the authorities to protect the spies kind of thing. But that's, I don't know. I don't want to. That's not for me to judge. I can look at it and say, well, whatever. I don't, you know, how God is going to see that. You know, if you'd say no and then get, you know, the guy would have shot you, I don't know how that would have gone either. It's just, I don't, you know. You can't, you know, anyway. the reason I'm bringing all this up, this stuff up, is because of the Second Amendment issues that are kind of on the table right now. Trump comes out and basically says we should ban, you know, transgenders from having, you know, having weapons. And of course, he's not being serious about that. But of course, then the news media grabs hold of that. All of a sudden, now they're defending Second Amendment rights. They hate the Constitution. They absolutely hate the Second Amendment. That's kind of their first thing right there. And of course, the First Amendment is not. They don't like that one either. They also don't like the Fifth, other than when they get called before Congress, they like to plead it a lot. A lot of things they don't like about the Constitution. But however, there is, it's interesting how they, if Trump says one thing, you know, he can come out and say smoking is bad, and they're gonna be touting the freedoms and everything that, you know, Trump is a dictator, he's trying to take away from smoking, and smoking is, you know. There's a lot more people behind the scenes, a lot more people in television than you realize are heavy smokers. There was a gal, who was it? She was, she had like a little morning show. She talked about a lot of recipes. She would always do recipes, like cheap and quick little recipes. She was kind of big on those kinds of things. And she was kind of a homemaker type gal, and you wouldn't have thought that she was a smoker at all. But I guess whenever the camera was off, whenever she was away from the audience, she would smoke like a chimney and then come back. And I guess that was, I was blown away by that when I found that out. A lot more of these people smoke than what you realize. But it's, anyway, that's beside the point. But if Trump came out and said smoking is bad, they would all be giving cigarettes away. They'd be in the streets defending cigarette companies. Cigarette companies would be the biggest, you know, the best thing that ever happened in the country. That's just the way they play him. That's just everything. And anything that he says, they choose the opposite. It doesn't matter what the rest of the nation thinks. As long, because, you know, got to resist. I was driving behind a car the other day. Saw this little fist. It was the typical Marxist, whatever you call it, the Che Guevara fist kind of thing in the air. And it was resist, all it said underneath the little fist that was sticking up, like it was a forearm and a fist, and underneath it said resist. And of course, that's in reference to resisting a tyranny that is Donald Trump, the tyranny and the fascism and the racism and the, he gets accused of being everything. Rosie O'Donnell is so messed up in her head. She's in another country now. She left the country because of Donald Trump, and now she still can't do anything but talk about him now over there. You know, when you leave the country, that's, you're done. You just stop talking about it. You're done. You've left the country. You've resigned from the country now. Just go. Just be done with it. Get over it. But no, you can't. So it's kind of like people who... I had a good friend of mine, and I didn't handle things the best way possible. I think there was probably a better way I could have handled some things, but the guy, every time I talked to him, he would just keep talking about his divorce, and it was for years, and it would always go downhill really fast. It would always turn very negative, always turn very, yeah, and there was no way to respond to it. I'd heard it hundreds of times, over 100, I'm sure, just probably 200 or 300 times. I mean, every time I would talk to the guy. And it just got to the point where I couldn't be around it anymore. I couldn't stand talking to him anymore. I wanted to talk to him. But I wanted to move forward with, let's do something. But no, it wasn't possible. Caught in this loop. It just kept replaying and replaying. And it became very difficult. So I became the bad guy then, apparently, at some point in there. I don't know. Because I didn't do enough or say something. I don't know what the deal was, but it would have been better for me to confront the guy about it and say something. But I just didn't. I would try, in a feeble way that I just wasn't mature enough to really deal with it, I guess, at the time. But anyway, that rumbling in the background really drives me nuts. Anyway, I hope it doesn't bother you, the listener. You, the listeners out there. So we have, the Second Amendment. Let's talk about that a little bit here. Now, the first of all, let's read the Second Amendment. That's probably a good place to start. I hadn't prepared this, but probably would be a good idea. Let's go here. Let's go and click on that. My computer has been so slow the last couple of days. I think it's time to shut it off and probably turn it on again. That might help. What just happened there? Okay. I'm going to go to Constitution, Second Amendment. Well, it's just sitting there, staring at me. It even refuses to accept my typing now. It's just a spinning ball. That's all I got, the spinning beach ball that is so popular with Apple computers. It's not the computer itself. It's actually the There we go. Search that with DuckDuckGo. It's actually the system itself. Just gets kind of bogged down. I leave it on too long. All right. Second Amendment of the United States Constitution. So in 1791, the amendment protected the right to keep and bear arms. Second Amendment of the United States Constitution protects the right to keep. See what we got here. The Second Amendment is... Blah, 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 blah. Here it is. This is the Second Amendment. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It was ratified and solidified and petrified on December 15th, 1791, as a part of the Bill of Rights. And the... this is Wikipedia. Let's see what else they say about this. And of course, this was all about muskets. It wasn't about the muskets. Yeah. Now somehow, again, I'm not a lawyer, but somehow Bruin got involved in this case called Bruin that everybody always brings up whenever we're talking about gun rights, which has to do with historical context and dangerous and unusual are all words that they'll throw out. So now they're basing things on, well, how has it historically been interpreted in the past? That we have to apply historical context or historical interpretation in the past to how we interpret it now. No, that's not the way. You don't build on someone else's mistakes. If someone made an interpretation that it was a mistake. This is why Roe v. Wade was basically overturned. It was a mistake. It should have been left with states altogether. And this is where it comes out. Now, in 2008, It was Columbia versus Heller. This one in 2022 might have been Bruin. Reinforced the right to carry with some reasonable restrictions. I'm pretty sure that was Bruin. It was New York State Rifle and Pistol Association. Yeah, that was Bruin. New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin. And it was a reinforced the right. That was in 2022, just a few years ago. Reinforced the right to carry firearms in public with some reasonable restrictions. A reasonable restriction would be it needs to be holstered. You can't just be carrying it in your hand. That's basically the carrying in your hand is more of a brandishing thing. Now, brandishing means you're flashing it around. In my opinion, that's brandishing. If you have a sidearm in your holster on your side, in your open, what's called open carry, where everyone can see it, that's called open carry. Now, that's supposed to be legal in every state in the union because you have the right to carry, and it has to be open carry. Now, there's some weird rules, though, in some states where you cannot do that. Or you can carry the weapon, but you can't have it loaded, which is what's the purpose of that. That's just, again, that's not a reasonable restriction. That's having it holstered is a reasonable restriction. What if your holster breaks? What if you have a malfunction in your holster? Now what do? You have to carry it in your hand. You have to do something different with that. Now you're breaking the law just because your holster broke, which again is not a reasonable restriction in my opinion at that point. Not having being able to load it, in my opinion, is not a reasonable restriction either. What's the use of having it? That's just stupid. You can carry it around, but you can't carry any bullets around with you. It can't be loaded. You have to have the bullets in a locked box. You can carry it around, but it has to be in a locked box. Why do police officers carry sidearms? Why do they carry firearms? Why do they have a shotgun in their car? Why do they have rifles in their trunk? Why do they have a pistol on their side? Why do they do that? Is it for what is that for? Is it just for historical context? To make them look more authoritative? Are they allowed to have bullets in that gun?
Well, they're highly trained and highly trained professionals, and they don't do anything. They never do anything wrong, do they? It's there to protect you.
It's not. It's there to protect them. A police officer is not obligated to protect you. They're not obligated to that. If they feel like their life is in danger, they are not. They don't have to step outside that bounds. Most of them will. But that is not an obligation legally. They can't be held responsible for it. If they're there and they see somebody's about to get shot, they don't necessarily have to shoot the other individual. It's not a requirement of them. It is kind of expected of them in their job, but it is not required of them to do that. If they deem it's not safe for them to do so, or whatever. Or puts their own life in risk. Firemen are not obligated to go up into a burning building to rescue somebody. It's not an obligation. It's mostly just done. That's why they are considered heroes when they do step beyond that boundary, that expectation. So that there's a understanding, but the reason, the whole reason an officer carries one is because he wants to protect himself. Because he's probably going to be in harm's way. If others run out, he runs in, that kind of thing. He or she runs in. So that's the whole reason they carry one. Well, there have been multiple high-profile cases in the last 10, 15 years where a good guy with a gun, armed citizens have stopped mass shootings before they even got started. And the reason you don't hear about most of the time, if someone tries to rob someone and the guy pulls a gun on him, or just even shows his gun, or they find out he has a gun. And I've heard stories about, especially truck drivers. I used to talk to truck drivers all the time. I had a job as a security guard in a factory where I was the main gate there, and I would do these walkthroughs every hour. I had to walk through this certain part of the plant, and these little boxes with a key, and you go to these places where there were keys, so they knew you were there at that spot watching whatever it was. You carried, basically, it was a clock in a thing that you carried around, and when you went up to this, there was a key on a chain, and you go up to the key spot, and you click the little box thing, and it would register that you were there at that point at that time. So every hour you were doing these walkthroughs. And now they have a little different system. They use barcodes and stuff. They're QR codes, whatever they are. These little walkthrough things. Anyway, we're doing this little walkthrough. And so between the walkthroughs, then sometimes truck drivers would come in, the delivery drivers would come through. And I'd be talking to them about stuff. And this, you know, occasionally they'd have to wait for somebody receiving to come in. So especially in the mornings, there'd be a lot of trucks lined up coming in. A lot of the drivers would come into the guard shack and talk. And this one guy, you know, countless times these guys would come in. They would tell stories about how they were, especially up in Detroit, when they would make deliveries up there, they'd be parked waiting just like they were there. And this is a little town called Shipshawana, which is a little bitty Amish town. Not a whole lot of bad things happen there. Occasionally, you know, an Amish horse would throw a shoe and hit somebody in the head. But other than that, not much would happen there. So they would tell these stories about, you know, stuff that would happen to them in some cities. And I can't tell you how many times. I remember the best, probably. I think it was the first guy I ever heard tell a story like this. So he was in a sleeper, and he was sitting. He was just getting ready to get in a sleeper. He had just pulled up, stopped the truck, and he heard some kind of banging around on the outside of his truck a little bit. And next thing you know, he looks out the window. Kind of looks out the mirror, and there's a guy climbing up the side of his truck. And he had his window down. He wasn't really, you know, because he had just pulled in. He just wasn't really even thinking about this. He just hadn't been there for very long. And he looks out the window, and this guy starts coming up the side of the truck and basically starts reaching into the truck through the window. Well, he just happened to have his gun right there beside him, and he stuck his gun in the face of this guy, and the guy took off and ran away. Now, he never reported that to the police officer. But, you know, for reasons, probably would have gotten in trouble for, you know, himself. Well, you can't have a gun here in Detroit. He wasn't a resident of the state, but he thwarted off a criminal, thwarted off who knows what that guy would have done. And story after story like that would come through. You know, every couple of weeks you'd hear a story about that. Some guy pulled a, you know, some truck driver kept somebody from breaking into his cab or whatever at night, in the middle of the night. And those don't get reported. You don't call the police on that. So how many of that, how many times does that happen? I don't think it happens as much as it used to, because now I think most people are scared to carry now, like they used to be. You just carry everywhere you go. It used to be possible to actually, it still is. I've done this before. I traveled down to Florida. Florida's gun laws at the time were almost exactly like they are here. I think it was 2005. No, it was 2007, maybe. That would have been right. 2002, probably. 2002, 2003, somewhere around in there. I was just turning 40. And we were traveling, I think, down. No, it was 2003, probably. 2004. Yeah, it's right around there somewhere. And I just out of interest, I wanted to see what it would take to get my handgun down to Florida. I knew that I was legal to carry in Florida. I knew I was legal to carry in Indiana. And so I traveled on an airline with my handgun. I just wanted to go through the process and see what that was like. And it was pretty painless. The ammo and the gun had to be in two different places, and the gun itself had to be in a little lock box at that time. It had to have either a trigger lock, or had to be in a box specifically locked up. And of course, the TSA had to have the ability to inspect that bag. So they went through kind of a separate inspection line. But it was my checked bags, of course, couldn't carry them, carry-ons. I think you can carry both on a carry-on, but at that time, I think you could. But they had to be in two separate bags. Anyway, so I did that. Got down there, carried it down there, carried it back. And all was well. And, you know, it was everything easy, peasy. All I had to do was check in at the ticket counter. Nowadays, people don't even check in at ticket counters anymore because they already have their tickets with them before they even show up at the airport. It used to be everybody had to stand in line at the ticket counter. Not anymore. So we have those kinds of laws. It's now where it gets interesting is if that plane has to divert. And they say they divert because of a mechanical, and now you're stuck someplace, and you have to travel now from that other state to the state you're in. Now what do you do? This is where it gets a little bit tricky, and you're kind of taking a risk involved in, you know, are you going to get your bag back? Are they going to allow you to have your bag if they know it's got a sidearm in it? If you're not qualified to, you know, if you don't have a reciprocal agreement on your particular carry permit or whatever it is, are you going to be able to get that bag with that gun in it? That's where things can get a little iffy. And I'm not so sure I would trust that they're going to handle everything correctly if they, you know, depending on what happens there. Now, of course, international travel is a whole other ballgame. Then you got all kinds of issues. Federal air marshals cannot even be on most international flights. They can't be armed, which is not known. Unless it has to be certain stipulations, a certain way of doing everything, if they are armed on an international flight. But it's just crazy, crazy rules, stuff like that. It's just nuts. But the Second Amendment is very clear in my opinion. Let's read it again. A well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary to the security of a free state, comma. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The way they used the English language back then was a little bit tricky, and this is where being a constitutional constructionist is important rather than being a constitutional, what do they call it? There's a different word for it. It's not a living document. It is a You have to look at the construction. There were a lot of letters passed around about, you know, before they would word this stuff and the way they were going to word it, the way they were going to, even punctuation made a difference. The basics of this whole thing is at the very end there, it says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, they're saying, well, you couldn't own a cannon. Oh, yes, you could. Yes, people owned cannons back in those days. There was a thing called a Gatling gun. It was a military weapon. People owned them. Individual citizens. Not military people. Citizens owned them. It wasn't just muskets. At the time this was written, yes, you didn't see very many cartridges out there at that time. But there were no restrictions on any of that stuff for a long time. Now, there were towns and cities where you'd walk into the city out west when there was a sheriff in town, places out west as the west was being kind of developed. You might walk into a small town, and the sheriff would meet you there at the because they could see you coming. It was, you know, you're coming in on your horse or your wagon or whatever you're coming in on. And the sheriff, the law, who was usually just a regular, usually was a part-time sheriff, but he was in charge of keeping the law, would meet you at the town border there, or meet at some point you'd meet up with the town sheriff. There were some cities out west where you had to check your gun with them. You either had to tell them what sidearms you had, or you had to give them your sidearm, as long as you were in town, which is a weird, weird way. There were a couple cities, like, not very many of them were that way. But there were some rules and some restrictions back then. Whether or not that was constitutional or not is, you know, I would say no, it's not. There are some city ordinances. Now, if it's private property, if I have property and I say I don't want to, nobody's allowed to come on here with their firearms on my property. That would be a constitutional agreement that we're coming to at that point. You want to come on my property, you can't come on my property with a sidearm. Now, of course, if you're law enforcement or if you happen to walk onto the property as a normal access, what's called an easement to my property, and you don't see that, I don't have any signs posted, you're not breaking any, of course not, you're not, it's a trespass law, it's kind of a vague thing, and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm just a guy with an opinion about law. And different states treat it differently as well. Some states that, I think there are some states that where you can't actually go on someone else's private property without permission to bring a sidearm. Other places you have to be restricted by notification that you can't bring a sidearm. Proper notification, whatever it is. So the there's different rules, different states, different stuff, which is, it should be blanket, just, yeah. It's a right, and nobody can take that right away from you. Nobody can. Now, nobody has to give you the right to be able to, you don't have the right to just walk on somebody's property either, but that's a whole other issue. Now, especially if it's posted. But again, I get into this, all this deep in the weeds on some of this stuff. What's not known is most of the mass shootings, most of the bad shootings that have ever happened, all of the laws that were in place would have stopped said shooter from doing what they did. All the laws that were in place in that state, if they would have been abided by, abidden, or whatever they call it, they would have stopped that perpetrator from doing what they did. But they broke the law. And that's at the crux of the issue here. All the gun control rights people, all the people, they want to take away guns from law-abiding citizens. As if there's not going to be anybody out there who's going to break the law and have a sidearm. And then what do the law-abiding citizens do? Well, they don't do anything. Now, of course, they like to say that, well, there's other countries that some of the worst mass shootings in the world are places that have the worst gun laws. Other countries. The largest mass school shooting was in another country. In fact, the Columbine issue was not supposed to be a school shooting. It was supposed to be a school bombing. People don't realize that. It was actually intended to be they had some kind of propane bomb system they had set up. It didn't go off. They had another propane bomb system somewhere else that was used to distract police, to keep them busy. It was off property. It was over somewhere else. And it was supposed to go off. And that did go off. The one at the school did not go off. Now, their plan was to blow up the school in a particular time where there were students that they knew were going to be there. And then any survivors that ran out from the explosion, they were going to meet them there with their weapons. This didn't happen. The bombs didn't go off. So they ended up just going into the school on a shooting rampage. That's what ended up happening. One of the worst school disasters before that was actually the worst school disaster before that was actually many, many years ago. And it was a school bombing. I think a guy drove a truck or something into the school. And again, I think it was propane bombs type system, whatever he had set up. Very bad situation. So there's just most of those things that have happened, laws were already in place. Laws were broken. So the laws and the restrictions that are in place are not going to change anything. They're simply limiting. And this happens, you know, 19 people are supposedly, so however many it was. What happened on 9/11, we ended up with 3,600 people dead. And that changed everything in aviation for the next 20 years, 25 years now. And yet, all of the things that those guys used that day, with one exception, the hardening of the cockpit doors, the flight deck doors. That's the only thing that has really changed since 9/11 that would have stopped them on that day. We are now back to being able to carry small knives, liquids to some degree, powders. It just, there are things you can carry now that onto the plane that would have been the same that day, basically. And you can, and with all the mistakes that they're making. But we have one of the largest bureaucratic agencies in the country, the Transportation Security Administration, TSA, as well as Homeland Security. Two huge, gluttonous organizations. It's questionable whether or not they are really fully intended. You know, we had private security. Most of the country had. There were several different. There was about five different major security companies that ran, and then some of the cities and some of the locations had their own security services that they hired, private security services. So that they were. Not much has changed, other than the pay scales and the cost and of course the centralization of the whole thing. There are still a few places in this country where they use private companies. But they're certified by the TSA. Private contractors, I should say. And my whole point of this, and what does this have to do with the Second Amendment? Well, the whole point of this is that the real, and of course, Ron Paul at one point was actually, you know, when he was running for president, he actually said, you get rid of the TSA, just need to allow passengers to start carrying guns. Of course, people who have no understanding of aircraft and everything else, Cokie Roberts, and is popular, very ridiculous statement. I was back flying with another company at that time, and so I think this was back in, because I was working as an airline pilot in the time of 9/11. And Cokie Roberts came out afterwards, and they were talking about arming pilots. We need to arm pilots. Cokie Roberts said, "I don't want some crazy pilot coming back in the cockpit or coming back in the cabin and starting to shoot people up." are you kooky, Cokie? This is, you're trusting the guy to fly the plane, which is what the crazy folks who got control of the plane did. It's really the only reason they killed the crews. By the way, the first people who died on 9/11 were crew members. The craziness of her statement was that if some pilot goes crazy, he's liable to come back there and start shooting him. And of course, she said he. She didn't just say him or her, because that just shows her misogynist tendencies. But anyway, him or her come back there and start shooting everybody up. Because, you know, you want to, because if a pilot wants to kill everybody, they have to have a gun to do that. It's not like they already have control of the airplane. I was going through security one time. I had a sweet tea from Chick-fil-A in my hand. And I got a random check. So they had to put me through the regular security thing. I walked through the metal detector thing and all that stuff. And I had my sweet tea in my hand as I walked through there. And she said, I have to look inside that. Oh, okay. Well, heaven forbid I should take over the plane with my sweet tea. And of course, now she didn't know. I think she was just doing her job. And I would get pretty cynical about some of the stupid stuff they would make us do. Well, what am I going to do with this? Take over the airplane? I'm in control of the airplane. I am the security officer. When that thing leaves the gate as the captain of the airplane, I am the security officer. I am in charge of security of the airplane. I have a bigger job than any TSA agent ever, than the head of the TSA at that point. There are things I can do as a captain. I don't have to say anything on the radio. There are things I can do with the airplane to configure it a certain way. They will shoot the tires out on the airplane. They will disable that airplane at my request. They're obligated to do that. Because heaven forbid that thing should get in the air and kill even more people once it's used as a weapon. Now, but of course, better check on me. Make sure I don't have something else besides sweet tea in that cup, because I could probably use it to take over the airplane. There's a reason why pilots are put through all kinds of background checks and all kinds of other things. And quite frankly, I've flown with some guys, a couple, in my career, that I kind of questioned why they were becoming pilots. Why are you here? What is going on here? And I have not said anything to anybody. It just, the thought will go through my head. It's like, I'm interested in why this, you know, I'd like to know what this guy's background is. Because to me, it seems a little, now there were flight attendants, that I know were a problem. Soon after 9/11, some of the things that had happened, and of course there were, it's about 2003, 2004, somewhere around in there, we had a flight attendant at one company I worked for I was very skeptical of. And it ended up being a situation where he was, my understanding was about 3 or 4 years later, he was actually caught in a radical group, with a radical group of some kind that was, I don't know what he was doing. I'm not sure, but I don't know what his intentions were there. It didn't have anything to do with an airline at that time, what he was caught doing. But I did find out the guy was kind of nefarious, and I kind of had to wonder about the guy who was working for the airline. This was 20 years ago. But I digress. This whole thing about the Second Amendment, we either trust people or we don't. And the whole idea of, now, believe me, I've been through this whole thing as a follower of Christ. I grew up in the Anabaptist movement, which was very much a pacifist organization, the Mennonite Church, the Church of the Brethren. And it was a very pacifist group, anti-military, anti-war. I get all that. But at the end of the day, you have to live in the real world here. And it's just, you, at some point you are, just believe me, I've wrestled through all the issues. I was a martial arts instructor while I was a Mennonite, and I was a black belt karate instructor. I had my own karate studio. It was my job. I was 19 years old, I had my own karate studio. And I wrestled through this kind of thing all the time. Because, how do you call yourself a pacifist? Which I don't consider myself to be a pacifist, by the way. There are situations where, first of all, a friend of mine, and a good friend, and I have a great deal of respect for the guy. He said one time, he goes, well,
I don't care. If somebody busts in my house and wants to shoot me, that's, you know, I'm ready to go. I don't care. I'm ready to go. So if he busts into the house, shoots you, you're dead. Now, he had three daughters and his wife there. And then he can just make your wife and your daughter's life a living hell, put them through something that they have to live with for the rest of their lives. But you're going to be okay because, you know, you're in heaven now. You don't care. Do you have any obligation to protect them? To protect yourself? Because you're the only thing standing between them. It's kind of like a pilot protecting the flight deck, protecting his life, because everybody on the ground, you know, on 9/11, those guys, once they were gone, there was nothing between them and that airplane crashing into thousands of people below. And I confronted him with that. He had nothing to say. The subject was changed pretty quickly after that. Life is perhaps more precious, I think, than what we realize. And if someone's going to kill you because of your faith, that's one thing. But again, if it's senseless and it's just stupid, life is too precious. And I think rehab exemplified that. It should be protected. So someone, you're walking down a street, and this lady runs past you, and she looks scared, and she runs off into an alley. She turns left, and she runs off into an alley. Another man just seconds behind her shows up, and he's obviously chasing after this lady. He says, "Which way did that lady go?" He's not a police officer. He's just some guy who obviously is up to no good. Maybe she ran by and she said, "They're trying to kill me. There's a man trying to kill me." And she runs off in one direction. And the guy walks up and asks you where the lady went. Are you going to say, "Well, I cannot tell a lie. I must tell you she ran that way and she went down there and she's hiding under that trash can over there. I can't tell a lie." No, that's not going to happen. I'm not doing that. I'm going to send this guy on a wild goose chase. Well, she got into a taxi and she drove that way. And I think she's probably about down there by that corner right now. If you jump in a taxi, and I think she said she was heading for the west side of San Francisco. Just go there. I bet you'll find her there. I think that's an acceptable lie. Right? You understand what I'm saying? You're protecting someone's life. Now, that's the whole pacifist thing as well. It's just, I get the anti-intervention, All right. So anyway, having said all of that, everybody always says, well, Joe Biden was famous. He came out and said it just like as clear as day, as clear as he could. People would say, well, you know, one reason the Second Amendment is because we can protect us against tyranny. We can go against the government. If the government, you know, we should cast off this such government and make sure that we get a new government, put a new government in place. Well, that whole idea of the government being a problem and the citizens rising up, it's not so much that it's us rising up and insurrecting the government. It's more about an issue of restrains the government from coming after its people, imposing too much because they might face retaliation. It's the deterrent factor is more than anything. If they know that we're a well-armed public. Now, Joe Biden came out and said, "Well, we've got F-16s and we got F-435s, whatever it is, we know." You know, come on, you're going to come against the government? Well, we got all this.
Oh, so you're going to go ahead and use the military against us then? You think the military is just a machine? There are people involved. Do you think that you're going to call out a missile strike on St. Louis and there's people in flying the plane from St. Louis and they have family living there? That doesn't work that way. That's the true term of posse comitatus. That is, Pritzker tried to say that. Well, this whole thing with the National Guard coming into Chicago. Now, I've got an interesting side note here. There's a guy who apparently knows Brandon Johnson's family a little bit, or was fairly close to some people there, and he doesn't like the guy. And he's made some comments. He said, mark my word, he said, in the next few weeks, maybe less, there's something going on with this whole thing about the feds coming to Chicago in the form of ICE and the National Guard. He said, they're going to find some things out about Brandon Johnson. They're going to find some things out about where some of the money is coming from. And if you start following the money with Brandon Johnson and some of the people he's involved with, they're going to discover some things. He said, if they start digging around in some of these organized crime the gangs are basically involved in organized crime as well. That's how they fund themselves. That there might be some money trickling around back towards the Brandon Johnson folks. So he's just saying. You know, he's not. This is what this guy was saying. I'm just repeating what this guy was saying. Which, if you ever wonder, why are they so motivated to keep federales out of their city or out of their state? What's such a big deal here? What's going on with all this? Now. All right, so that's the topic for the day. There's my thing for the day. Second Amendment shall not be infringed is pretty clear and pretty obvious to me. I've thought about just putting shall not be infringed on the back of my truck. Because, you know, that way I can be that guy. Put a couple flags back there. I might put it on my Jeep. I'm still thinking about that because I got a vinyl letter. I can cut vinyl letters with my little vinyl letter cutting machine. I got a couple of them, actually. I can pretty much make anything like that. So I'm thinking about doing something like that just to make it clear. You know, it's just a simple statement. Anyway, the caller. I had a call from an individual who didn't leave a message. He just called. And then he apparently got a text message. I got a text message then since they didn't leave a message on there. And the text message, it's kind of an inside joke here, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. Back in the 90s, late 90s, there was a group, a music group, called Creed and Salt. And they were sometimes confused with other groups. This is, you know, in reference to AI. This is before AI existed, actually, these guys. And they were an awesome group. They were incredible. Raw talent, raw something. And there was no artificial intelligence involved with this group. There was no artificial intelligence. There could be questionable whether there was any intelligence at all whatsoever. But what intelligence was there was not artificial. Let's just put it that way. If there was any intelligence, it was not artificial. But maybe some artificial stuff. But it might have had some hair that was artificial. Because it didn't last. Much like their hair, their band didn't last. The music that they did was it was incredible. It was an incredible band. Now, in fact, it was so incredible. At one point, they were confused a little bit. There was another band, I think, at another event, one of the events that was kind of confusing because they kept talking about them as the greedy snout. I think it was one of the words. I think It was Creedence Halt. And, of course, there was another band that kind of stole their name, basically trimmed down the name, kind of more of a street slang for the name. They just called themselves Creed. Stole part of the name out of there because they were kind of piggybacking on their fame and notoriety. It was a real group, and it was a real thing. And this guy was asking about whether or not it was, you know, he thought maybe it was AI generated. Maybe AI stood for something else back then. Probably did. Arterial. Indiscrimination. I don't know. Something. I don't know. It was arterial infarction. I think it was something like that. That would explain a lot more about the group, I think, probably than anything. But it's kind of an inside joke, folks. I'll talk more about that later. That's good tea. So we have. For tomorrow's show, we're going to be, again, you can call in 812-379-8778, call or text. You can go to google.com/voice and put that number in. You can text or call regardless of what country you're in, or you can just call on your cell phone or text on your cell phone as well. You can do that as well. It asks for your name, but you don't have to give me your real name. You can just, it automatically does that. Just make up a name if you don't want to. You can be, whoever you want to be. Bubba Jones. I don't care. The point is, tomorrow's show, going to have some more audio clips either tomorrow or Thursday. Probably going to have a live show tomorrow morning, I believe. At this point, it looks like it. God bless, folks. Have a great rest of your day, and I will try to, we'll just have a show. That's all there is to it. All right, see ya.